Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So I love this. The senior economists over at the National Bureau of Economic Research declared the recession over this week, and President Obama's senior economic advisor, Larry Summers, formerly of Harvard University and the Clinton administration, says he's finished. He's quitting. Summers is not likely to brush himself off and declare a job well done, though. As he heads back to the private sector, he, like a lot of economists, are learning a few lessons about the limits government has in controlling the economy, particularly during a recession. And it's the perfect question to put to another former economic advisor from the Clinton administration, Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor, who has laid out his own plan for a strong U.S. recovery in his new book, Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. Good morning, Robert Reich. What are the limits to government influence on the economy that the Obama administration seems to be learning all over again?
The government cannot really do all that much about the business cycle. I mean, if there's one thing we've learned over the last 60 years, is that, you know, the economy goes up and down, and the government can, at the margin, try to reduce the speculative booms and the busts to some extent, but there is only a marginal impact. But beyond that, or I should say, John, underneath that cycle is, as I suggest in the book, long-term structural changes in terms of, is the workforce prepared? Is it getting a fair or share of the gains from economic growth? How does the global economy and technology affect who gets what? These structural issues the government can influence, must influence.
How does a program like one of the ones that you advocate in this book, a reemployment program, constitute an effective use of government influence over the economy? And describe what reemployment insurance would be as opposed to traditional unemployment insurance.
Well, this is a good example of the structural change because 40 years ago, when we had a downturn in the economy, the assumption was, and it was a fair assumption, most people would get their old job back again when the economy turned up. So all you needed was unemployment insurance that would basically tide families over until the economy did better again. And it was a countercyclical policy, put money in their pockets so they could continue to spend. But now most people are not going to get the old job back again. And we pretend through unemployment insurance, that old policy, that they are. What we need, I suggest, is a kind of re-employment system that, for example, gives people, if they have to take a new job that pays less than the old job, say 50% of the difference in wage for up to, say, 2 years. And also gives many more opportunities for job retraining and job search assistance and really emphasizes getting people into new jobs rather than waiting for the old job.
You know, that's a fascinating look because the old business cycle is a kind of linear issue. It's a line that goes down and up. And if the assumption is everyone's going to get their old job back, you're basically just reconnecting the cars of the same train. But if, in fact, you're sort of creating a third dimension called shifting careers, that's a much bigger challenge. How does the government address something like that without creating a giant sort of bureaucracy where Louise's expertise has to be calculated against Jim's over here, and there's three different educational programs and all kinds of different industries that need retraining?
I don't think the government should try to get involved in deciding what Louise needs. All the government needs to do is create a system in which Louise, who has lost her job, can navigate for herself this very different economy, knowing full well that that old job isn't coming back, but is also given the tools and resources to find where the economy is going and what those new job and career paths might be.
Here's a thought. Some economists were saying on the program earlier this week that the assumption that things are going to come back the way they were during the bubble is really erroneous because you have to put that aside. That's not going to return. So you got to find another calculation of what it means to come back. And as a result, businesses are poised on a kind of a fence. Do they take a plunge and invest in new jobs and new equipment? Or do they wait until it actually happens? And the question of how much of the economy is willing to take the plunge or how much of the economy is going to just stay on the fence is the difference between a real recovery and something that just sort of peters along. Can the government push people off the fence and encourage them to take a plunge?
The only way government can do that is to make sure that demand that is, consumers who make up 70% of the economy, that they have enough money and that they have a sustainable future in terms of the direction that most consumers are heading in, so that they can actually buy most of what the goods and services the economy produces are going to be available. The problem now we face, John, and I try to specify exactly why in the book, is that for 30 years, wages have been flat and consumers have been masking from each other, from themselves, from the economy, the reality that there has been no real improvement in the position of middle class. They did this by women streaming into the workforce, the paid workforce, and then secondly, everybody working longer hours, and then finally
and
going deeper and deeper into debt.
Right.
But all of those coping mechanisms are now over. So we are facing now a fundamental problem, and that is the middle class doesn't have the money. There is a crisis in demand, and it goes way beyond a stimulus package. I mean, even if the stimulus package had been large enough, even if you did everything that a lot of macroeconomists say should have been done, you still come to the end of the road. Eventually, government has got to get out of the way, and consumers are back to where they were 30 years ago. They don't have the money. And that's why we've got to think in much more structural terms.
And the book Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future is Robert Reich's latest book. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, John.
Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration and current professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Back in the private sector there in academia where Larry Summers is bound as of next January. What will it take for you to take the plunge and start spending again in this tentative economy? It would take the raise and or Christmas bonus that I've foregone for the last 3 years, writes Joey from Jersey City at thetakeaway.org. Todd, how about you?
Well, we got a text here from Providence, Rhode Island, John. I will never spend again like the pre-recession days. That kind of spending caused me to lose sight of what's important.
Somebody's learned their lesson. A decent property value living in Michigan. It's impossible to refinance right now. That's what Lara writes via Facebook.
And we're hearing from Pontiac, Michigan. Spend like that again, it would take me not having learned a single thing about debt or when to say when. It would take some idiotic no-doc loan or something like that.
You know, maybe the U.S. Treasury should learn that lesson that our Pontiac, Michigan listener learned. A job that pays money, writes John via Facebook. I'm not proud. I'm not lazy. I just live in Detroit. In 2 weeks, when it's all behind me, I'll find a job and start spending. Not in Detroit, though. Not even in Michigan. If everyone who claimed to love Detroit but lives elsewhere would move to Detroit, there would be people for whom burgers would need to be flipped. Maybe. You know how to reach us at thetakeaway.org.